weeks, you can catch all the action.
This is Queens Football on CFRC.
You are listening to the only destination for local music, sports, and news, CFRC 101.9 FM and CFRC.ca.
What's for lunch today?
Alphabet soup.
Soup, soup, soup. Alphabet soup.
I made it special.
Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy.
It's alphabet soup.
We call it alphabet soup.
Alphabet soup.
Alphabet soup. Because we make it a lot with alphabet-shaped pasta.
The letters are now twice as big.
Whatever's fun, little stars, little letters. Sometimes I will use
alligator, big, bear, snake.
Campbell's alphabet soup.
Soup from a can? Disgusting!
Good morning. It's Tuesday at 10 a.m., time for alphabet soup. This week on the show, I'm going to be trying something totally different. A new format for the show, where instead of the weekly playlist of assorted songs that I've usually prepared for you, I'm going to be focusing on just three albums as a whole. I think that this new style for the show better reflects how I actually think about and listen to music in my own personal life. If I like how this episode goes, I'm going to stick with this formula going into the future of Alphabet Soup. Now, onto the show. Sometimes the energy, attitude, and spirit of the band is all that's needed for a particular audience at a particular time to identify with it. Pavement is a band that was formed in California in the late 80s by Stephen Malkmus and Scott Canberg. The duo had a couple of early false starts, but found their legs when they became a trio with the addition of Gary Young, their high school friend, on the drums. With some early demos recorded in Gary's basement, they started to perform together, and by the early 90s they were at it full time and had put together their first album for today's episode. Slanted and Enchanted was released on Matador Records in 1992.
I'm sorry.
It's particularly funny for me to read about the history of this album. In my time doing radio and covering local indie music, I've spoken to quite a few bands and talked to them about the story of their formation, their first performances and recordings, and sometimes even their breakup. Pavement's origin story is the perfect blueprint for the indie backstory. In the same way a superhero backstory might involve dead parents, the first ever performance was at their local college radio station. The first recordings were done in their high school friend's basement, who joined the band because they needed a drummer. Then later on, they had to get a new drummer because the original was drinking too much. It feels like a textbook. But of course, somebody has to write the textbook. Slanted and Enchanted broke ground, even if it was by accident. Like a lot of great debuts, the accidentalness of it is kind of the key. Speaking about the album in 2010, Stephen Malcolmus said, quote, "It's not like some Radiohead record, where the whole thing is good. Our records aren't good in that way. Our records are more attitude and style. I think Slanted and Enchanted is probably the best record we made, only because it's less self-conscious and has an unrepeatable energy about it," end quote. I think unrepeatable is my favorite word in there. This album always makes me think about that famous quote about how you have 20 years to make your debut album and then 6 months to make your second. I don't even know how that saying actually goes or who originally said it, but you get the idea.
Yeah.
There was something that kept on bouncing around in my brain as I read about the early days of Pavement. There's a 90s indie nostalgia article in basically every music magazine that you can think of that tries to mythologize the idea of a couple of friends getting together in the gaps between college semesters to smoke weed and record scratchy demos. Feels like music journalists like to write about this as if they're blowing the dust off a stone tablet and reading an ancient spell for how to get on MTV. But I couldn't stop thinking that this happens every week where I live. The fact that Pavement's sound and style still reflect the indie spirit of right now is completely evidenced by the surge of online popularity that came with that B-side song Harness Your Hopes. I think an essential component to being cool is not trying. But people can usually tell when somebody's trying to look like they're not trying, but they're actually trying really hard. That's the thing that I find so interesting about Pavement, is that their effortlessness is extremely genuine. I enjoy this clip from 1995 where Stephen Malkmus is going through the Pavement discography so far to that point. This is what real effortlessness sounds like.
This is actually the next thing that came, Slant Enchanted. This was our groundbreaking LP, kind of fall style album cover art. It's pretty nice, especially if you like the fall. Now this was the single that came.
Slanted and Enchanted probably represents something mystical and transcendent to stoner millennials. But I love this album because to me, where I live, what I do here on this show and others, it feels permanently relevant. To me, this album is a debut that reminds the indie scene of today the value of being lazy, not trying, and not caring.
Anticipating the sun comes up, the skies won't sink my soul. I've dreamt of this, but it never comes. But it never comes. Horizon! The nature's dry. Traced out but dreaming. The sun comes up, the blisters burn my soul. I'm dreaming of something now, of something now. On the horizon, the nature's dry, and all the groovy ones.
That was Pavement's debut album, Slanted and Enchanted. Our second album of the day is also a debut, also by an artist perhaps known for his laid-back apathy and sense of humor, But this album arose out of quite a different set of circumstances and quite a different generation. 2 years after Pavement put out their debut, Earl Sweatshirt was born in Chicago. Earl got his start as a member of the Odd Future hip-hop collective, alongside now superstars like Tyler the Creator and Frank Ocean. Earl was a popular favorite among fans of the group at the time, and the anticipation for his debut album was enormous. Frank and Tyler had already made the step into the mainstream with their solo debuts, but Earl's musical future was a little less certain. His mother was concerned about him and what he was getting into, and had him sent to a school for troubled youth in Samoa, thousands of miles away from his rising internet rap career. When he returned in early 2012, the then 18-year-old Earl began working on new music, and in 2013 released Doris through Odd Future Records.
What's up, nigga? Why you so depressed and sad all the time like a little bitch? What's the problem, man? Niggas wanna hear you rap. Don't nobody care about how you feel. We want raps, nigga. Raps. Grandma's passing, but I'm too busy trying to get this fucking album cracking this year. So I apologize in advance if anything should happen. And my priorities fucked up, I know it. I'm afraid I'm gonna blow it. And when them expectations raising, because daddy was a poet, right? Talk all you want, I'm taking no advice. And I'm about to relish in this anguish. And I'm stressing over payment, so don't tell me that I made it. Only relatively famous in the midst of a tornado. Misfitted, I'm Clark Gable, I'm not stable. Abrasive as fuck, and they all pay me. I'm chuckling, cross-faded in public, heart racing till blood is lit.
Look like you don't give a fuck again, right?
Hey, Tepe, what's up, get it? I heard you back, I need them raps again. I need the verse, I don't care about what you going through or what you gotta do, nigga. I need bars, 16 of them.
I don't fuck up with too much of y'all, bitch. Judging by the pants and the mall grip. Gully in the Vans with the dark tints. I'ma start this shit, nigga. Nightlife living. Riding in a Jeep, I'ma side swipe, nigga. This shit life flight, that's all right, nigga. Him in the left, ready when the price is in. Right, got the whip and I ain't got the license for it. And Jill got me living like my life is golden. Sitting on the sofa, feeling high and dormant. And we gon' smoke another while the mic records it. The nice is doing it, oh, what you staring at? Acting like you never seen a toothless care cap. Bars hotter than the block where we be at. Studying these bugs are gonna flop like D-Vag. See that, nigga? For the time being, I'ma be that, nigga. Believe that, nigga. You see that, nigga? And for the time being, I'ma be that, nigga. Believe that, nigga.
It's pretty hard for anybody to get into the mind of Earl at that time. He was doing something that basically nobody has done before or since. His rapid rise to stardom happened almost entirely over the internet and when he wasn't even present. It's essential, though, to remind yourself through all of this just how young he was at the time. Take a listen to this clip from his first ever interview, just before the album's release, where he speaks about his mindset and his experience with the fame.
Earl, please, he'll be fine. When did you actually leave?
June of 10.
And I guess already by that point, yeah, it was starting to pop off and the vids were like getting crazy and stuff. And so are people hitting you up? Are you talking to them at all while you're gone? Like, aware that it's going bananas?
I was aware. I mean, because the internet.
And did you feel weird to be like, I'm missing out on something this insane?
Yeah, it was.
Were you pissed? Were you annoyed?
Yeah, initially. But then I also got to see that all this shit isn't fun all the time. For instance, like the block that like we came up on, like that we were there when no one was there, up there like every day like it was nothing. I was up there the other day trying to just like skate around. And you fucking can't do it because someone's like,
hey, can I get a photo?
It's like Taco is like that for you too? It's always like that?
If I were to break down the meaning behind every lyric and dive into the notes on the production of this album, which was done by Earl himself, Frank Ocean, RZA, The Neptunes, and Bad Bad Not Good, it might eat up the rest of the episode. This album doesn't need all that to be understood, though. This is as clear a portrait of a guy discovering who he is and what his life is meant to be as was ever recorded. The inside of the CD case shows a wall printed with the words, "How are you feeling?" and spray-painted, "Like shit." In an interview for the 10-year anniversary of Doris last summer, Earl described his mindset at the time of recording the album.
You've been sort of celebrating this 10-year anniversary of an album that's super important to you.
Yeah, man. That has been crazy, I'm not going to lie. it kind of just brought back just everything from that time and some of like the ambiguity. Mm. That's what I think really like stuck out to me.
Can you define that a little more clearly?
I was 18. I was trying to figure it out. They were like, you're the big rapper, like make an album. I think that's why I think part of that album was a deliberate like shot in the parachute or in like the foot. Cause it was too, the name, the whatever, it was too big for me at the time.
Yeah.
Cause I was 18 years old, right? Crazy. It was like, what? I don't even know if I have that much to say right now.
Yeah.
But Earl did have something to say. To me, this album represents a particular kind of adolescent sadness turned to anger. But at the same time, it's a self-aware and kind of somber look in the mirror. Throughout the songs, Earl is constantly lashing out at his parents and his school and a host of other things in his mind and in his life. But he always backs it up with some kind of admission of guilt, too. The songs describe a feeling of a kid who's cursing everything that's holding him back, but deep down he kind of knows that he's the source of the problem and only his own growth can really fix it. In that same interview, Earl goes on to speak about his feelings of sensitivity as a child.
How long did it take for you to realize you were sensitive? Because most people don't know they're sensitive. They have to figure it out.
Oh, nah, I knew I was sensitive. I knew that I was, oh, nah, I've gone through ups and downs with it. I feel like in my childhood, I was incredibly sensitive.
Because that could turn into anger, too.
And that's, yo, dog, that's what I've had to unpack as an adult.
Yeah.
As a child, I had, like, the get mad heart to the throat, face hot.
I've had
like,
Face hot.
Throat hurts.
Yo.
That's crazy.
It's that combination of personal growth and a network of personal connections that can allow someone to move through these kinds of feelings. Luckily for Earl, he was caught feeling this way at a time when he had both. This album is littered with not only lyrical references to his friends, but also because most of them at the time were musicians, verses and instrumentation provided by them.
I know it don't seem difficult to hit you up, but you're not passionate about half the shit that you into, and I ain't having it, and we both know that. I don't mean to offend you, I'm just focused today, and I don't know why it's difficult to admit that I miss you, and I don't know why we argue, and I just hope that you listen, and if I hurt you, I'm sorry. The music makes me dismissive. When I'm awake, I'm just drifting. I'm not complaining, it's just to say that I stay pretty busy lately, and I could be misbehaving. Behaving, I just hang with my niggas. I'm fucking famous if you forgot. I'm faithful despite all what's in my face, in my pocket. And this is painfully honest. And when I say it, I vomit. On cloudy days when I'm salty, I play the hate to the logic. State to state for the profit. It ain't a stain on me, nigga. My mama raised me a prophet. I play for dollar incentive. And where I'm walking is studded. And half an hour spent, I stumble to where she parked when she visit. I grab the bottle and chug it. I see the car in the distance. I know the dark isn't coming. For the moment, if I could hold it. You see, it seems that all my dreams got dimmer when I stopped smoking pot. Nightmares got more vivid when I stopped smoking pot. And loving you is a little different. I don't like you a lot. You see, it seems like
I'm coming back, I gotta handle business. Vanished to my sleeper seat. Left you at Terminal 3. I'll meet you down in baggage claim in a couple weeks, a fortnight. When you parade my homecoming, don't cry. You know I can't live in any place I visit. To live and die in L.A. I got my Fleetwood Mac. I could get high every day, but I be sleepy, OCD, and paranoid. So give me Bali Beach, no Molly, please. Palm, no marijuana trees. Yo, hickeys on my aorta. And tattoos you could only see when I'm playing surfboarder. Put whiskey in that salt water. I emptied every canteen just to wear that straight edge varsity you think's cool. They thought me soft in high school. Thank God I'm jagged. Forgot you don't like it rough. I mean, he called me a F-it. I was just calling his bluff. I mean, how ain't no am I gonna be when I'm aiming my gun? And why's his mug all bloody? That was a 3-on-1. Standing ovation at Staples. I got my Grammys in gold. Polka dots on my Brit. I'm not supposed to be stunting. It's all melodic, this song. I catch this vibe in my sleep. But I'm just jet lagged as all and restless. All my dreams got more vivid when I stop smoking pot. Nightmares got more vivid when I stop smoking. smoking pot. Loving you's a little different. I don't like you a lot. I mean, oh, I don't know what we're about. What good is West Coast weather? If you're bipolar, if I'ma need this sweater, I'd rather be West Coast. West knows, I see how it goes. I put the flowers in bowls. I know they're coming in droves. You'll only miss when it goes.
Yeah, I think that's it.
When it goes.
There's a lot on Doris that I cannot relate to. He talks about his relationship with his parents. His father was a successful poet, and his mother was a civil rights law professor in California. He talks about how race and identity affected him growing up. But what makes the album so captivating is the way that he can just paint a picture and lead you along with him as he's navigating through some of the most complex and intrapersonal conflicts imaginable, all at such a young age. Doris by Earl Sweatshirt is a debut album marking the start of an artist's long and exceptional career, filled with brutally honest therapeutic self-reflection that freezes a moment of youth and time with complete clarity. Both of the albums that we've heard so far on the show today have been debuts, the first time that the world hears a new artist in the full album format. Our third album of the day is not quite that. Kingston band The Astros have been putting out albums since 2019, but their third and most recent independent release, titled Just Around the Corner, marks a distinct moment in their career.
Well, here we go again, she said with hesitation. I think I heard you right, but I could be mistaken. I talk it out, but all my friends are taken. So I'll take that on the chin and keep on wasting my time with all the reasons that I came up with so I could tell you off.
While still featuring some of the dreamy lyrics and fuzzy guitars of their prior two albums, Just Around the Corner brings some fresh and focused elements to the songwriting side of things. To help understand what this shift means to the band, I've spoke to Andy of the Astros following the album's release to hear their side of the story when it comes to Just Around the Corner. It's really not just me talking, right, when I say that this album is a shift, change up for the Astros. You've kind of changed up your sound a little bit now that you guys have been a band for a while and this is your third album on the road.
Yeah, yeah, no, absolutely. It's not just you talking. It is for sure, like, such a switch up for us. It's a switch up in a few ways, actually. I think, like, sonically, like, it's very apparent we're trying some more mellow, like, acoustic twang-influenced stuff that we haven't done before, which is really exciting, but also a big switch up we felt in, like, a maturity like, from a maturity perspective, it feels like the songs are far more mature and far more meaningful. In the past, we've sort of just written songs based on if we thought it sounded cool and sort of what excited us. And this time, it was like what excites us and also just finding meaning in it for ourselves a bit more in a way that we hadn't really done before. So there's a big switch up sonically, but also just a switch up in the writing process and it just definitely felt like the four of us sort of grew up together a little bit on this one in a way that we had on other records.
Yeah, for sure. And you guys kind of have, right? Because you guys have been bandmates for, is it 5 years now?
Yeah.
And this is your third Astros album. This album feels a little bit like freezing sort of this moment in time and putting it away in those vinyls forever. Did you think about, while putting this album together, or do you think about the idea of looking back on this album, maybe, you know, 45, 50 years in the future, and this vinyl could be a prized possession for a long time to come. Do you think about how you might look back on these years of your life through the lens of an album?
I think absolutely. I mean, I can't really ask for, as I grow old or as we all grow old, like, I can't really ask for a better way to remember being in my 20s with my best friends than a physical album of music that we're all really proud of and really love, and those memories we had making it and playing it. I don't think there's a better sort of physical representation of that, and I can't really ask for much more. I think definitely when we were making it, we always think back to like how excited we were when we'd write a song and it totally was new and fresh from anything we did before. And it is kind of weird, like, once the album's out, you let go of all of that, and it fully becomes, like, your memories and just, like, a point in life. It's not just like, well, this album's not out yet, so all of this is kind of still in the present for us. And now we the album's out, and it's a full just, you know, 2 years of us hanging out that's kind of marked its end, which is really exciting. But, yeah, I think definitely, you know, 40 years from now, I will, I'm sure I'll spin the album and kind of get a little emotional about, you know, being back at this time with my friends. But super, super grateful for having that. And, yeah, I didn't think of it that way, but that's going to be a lot of fun.
That's a bullseye with your hands tied and your eyes closed. Should I need to know, I'll know exactly where to throw the land. It's the way you fired back. I'm gonna land a few more shots before the fade to black. Too high, while I'm below the tree.
Well, you guys mentioned early on, before the album came out, that you were kind of entering your denim era. And when I was speaking to you before the album's release, you guys were still kind of on the fence about the album cover. When it came down to that sort of deadline where you had to pick something to represent the visuals of Just Around the Corner, how did you guys land on this cover here? Because your previous covers, design-wise, had a little bit more sort of going on in terms of like, typefaces and colors and all this, but this one is just kind of that picture of the boys walking off into the sunset. So how did you come and land on that picture there?
That's also a great question. We always knew that we didn't want text on this album. We, as you mentioned, like, we love sort of flashy typefaces and fonts and stuff, and we knew that this one, we felt like it wasn't an album that we wanted a giant Just Around the Corner like plastered onto the cover. We just didn't feel like that was the vibe. So we always sort of knew that, and we knew we wanted it to just be this photo that felt like it sort of encapsulated the whole record. And it really just came out of we did a like an album photo shoot with our photographer Kellerman Stapley, and we were just kind of hanging out in a field at sunset, and it was a really like lovely day, just like hanging out taking photos with nothing flashy, no props, no big jumpsuits like last time. And then it just came, we looked at all the photos, and that one and the back art, which was us and holding these flashlights, these old style flashlights to the camera. We had those two, and we sort of knew that we wanted those to be the front and the back, but we couldn't decide on the order. And there was a version where the back art was actually the front art, and vice versa, and we just landed on this one. We just kind of sat with it for a couple of days and felt that this album felt like our most down-to-earth album, and felt like, you know, the most we've ever felt as the four of us, like comfortable as the four of us, and just felt like an album that was hanging out with us. So we thought the picture of us kind of running off into the sunset was the best version of it to represent everything.
And it kind of makes the album sit well in your discography. Like, when you look at all the albums next to each other, we see the first ones are flashy and exciting, and then it's kind of like, whoa, what's this? You know, Just Around the Corner. What's going on here? It's pretty interesting.
Yeah. No, we definitely wanted it to stand out. I had always said we didn't know what we wanted the art to be, but I really wanted the art to feel like, if it was on vinyl, it could be on some random shelf and you could pull it out and it felt like it just sort of was like semi-timeless. It wasn't distinctly 2024, but it wasn't distinctly trying to be like retro or nostalgic or anything in its art either. It just felt like a piece of art that could blend in with a bunch of other records and just feel like it fit and it was at home on a shelf.
For sure, yeah. And now it wouldn't be right to really talk about the release of Just Around the Corner without talking about that show that you guys did at the Broom Factory. It was kind of like an all-star cast of Kingston Indie, and but it was a little bit different than what the Astros shows kind of have a little bit of a reputation for being. You know, there's like the crowd surfing and the chaos that we've seen from you guys before, but the word that was stuck in my head when I was walking out of the Broom Factory was more cinematic. What kind of motivated you guys to go in that direction for this release party?
That's a lovely word. That's so nice. That means that'll mean a ton to the rest of the band as well. That means a lot to me. We knew we love our rowdy reputation. We love those rowdy shows. But we sort of felt that, you know, you kind of came to an Astros show and you knew what you were going to get. And we really wanted to do something that felt like it was fresh and it was new. And then so we always knew we had to do something a little bit different. And we wanted to up the production on this one, get a light show going. And then it just became, once we sort of put our heads in a different space from our typical shows, it sort of started becoming like, well, what can we do with this show? And then we extended out the band from there and got some of our friends to hop on with us and just see what happens. And it just kind of kept going from there as we rehearsed and figured it out. The show kept growing and the light show got larger than we anticipated. And it was like super exciting. So we just wanted it to feel like it was a sort of next level show and something that was very different. We wanted to try and surprise people who felt like they were maybe coming to a rowdy show or coming to one of our typical shows. But the word cinematic is super nice.
I drink these. What if I?
definitely was a takeaway like that. And you mentioned something a minute ago about how this is the most comfortable that you've ever felt as a band. And I spoke to quite a few different people in between the Sugar Pills performance and yours, just about, you know, are you excited for the show and this and that. And it was a good mix of people who it was their first ever Astros show and people that I think might have been maybe your family or something like that who had been to almost every single one. And I think it was kind of an interesting, like, full circle moment for the Astros timeline almost, where you're bringing together people who have been longtime fans or people who are just hearing about you for the first time now.
Oh, like, definitely. Like, on the floor that night, you know, I think every time we play a show, you really only expect to see, like, your family and your close friends. So, especially with the release show banner, I really just expected to see sort of a lot of familiar faces. And we were so thrilled to see a ton of faces we didn't recognize. And that just meant a ton. Like, it was so cool getting to meet new people who had never been to shows, or sometimes you meet a few people and they're like, I've come to your last five shows and this is the first time you're meeting them. And that's like so cool as well. Those people are so kind for doing that. And it was definitely a full circle moment. It felt like we, once again, like as I mentioned and as you reiterated, it's like we were a band that definitely feels more comfortable in ourselves now. And we definitely were super thrilled that hopefully that has sort of resonated with some people and got some more faces in the building.
This album opens with the song All My Friends Are Taken, which is a great track to open on. It kind of starts with that more sort of subdued sound and then cuts into that more classic Astros like fuzzy guitar that we've heard before from you guys. What was the choice like to choose sort of what's going to be the opening and ending tracks of this album? Because those seem really deliberate choices.
Yeah. It's a great question, actually. They sort of just came off feel. When All My Friends was being written, we just sort of had a feeling that we wanted to put it first, especially because it's, as you said, it does mix both sounds quite well. It has that kind of laid back acoustic feel before sort of blowing up into our more typical sound. And we liked the idea of that being the opener, kind of setting the stage of both sounds you're sort of going to get on the record. And it just felt like a weird track to open on, especially our last album, Sci-Fi Radio, we opened on a song, What's on the Menu, and we felt like that was just like a really catchy opener, and this one we felt was a little bit different. We always liked the idea of it feeling like it doesn't even remotely resemble the last album's opener. We thought that was cool. And then the closer, the title track, Just Around the Corner, similar thing. It kind of mixes with both sounds, with both kind of the more typical, like, heavy, fuzzed-out Astro stuff and then the twangy sort of country-influenced stuff. And we just kind of put that at the end. We always sort of knew we wanted the title track at the end. It was, like, a meaningful one to us. And it sort of ended up almost being, it wasn't even fully deliberate, but it was a happy accident that both songs, both the opener and the closer, have, like, are the two songs on the record that use sort of both sounds, the sort of fuzzed up, like, blown out things and the twangy sounds. They both have them in the songs, so that wasn't deliberate. That was like a happy accident, but those two songs were very deliberate. We kind of knew in the process of writing them that they were going to be placed there.
All right, Andy, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. The album, Just Around the Corner, it's out now, and it's sounding great. Thank you so much.
Thanks, man.
Was Just Around the Corner by the Astros. Thank you for listening to Alphabet Soup. If you liked what you heard on today's show, be sure to tune in next week for more. If you'd like to listen to past episodes of the show, you can find them on radio.cfrc.ca/programs. The show is written, edited, and produced by me at CFRC in Kingston, Ontario. I'm your host, Hayden, and I'll see you next week.
AMS Food Bank provides confidential and non-judgmental food options to members of the Queens community in the most comfortable environment possible. The Food Bank helps to ensure that Queens students can be healthy and productive as they pursue academic achievement and alleviates poverty amongst Queens community members. We are open Monday to Friday from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. in room 105 of the Rideau Building. For entry into the Food Bank, we ask to see the sticker on the back of your student card to ensure you are a valid student. We have an amazing team of volunteers to welcome you and answer any questions you may have. To donate, you can e-transfer controller at ams.queensu.ca with the subject line AMS Food Bank Donation, or bring non-perishables to our location during the service hours. Also check out the Pay What You Can Peach Market, providing equal access changing hunger, in the new medical building for fresh soup and entrees on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. For any questions, please reach out to foodbank@ams.queensu.ca.
Folk Everything is your passport to the finest in folk music. Old, new, and everything in between. The wonderful, the wild, and the weird.
Walk quietly by, he won't bother you. He's a busy man, he's got things to do.
It's all here Saturdays from 10 a.m. until 1 p.m. Folk Everything with Hugh on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston.
Tune in Sundays at 11 p.m. for Orchestral Maneuvers After Dark with me, DJ Squared. Each episode features a great mix of new and vintage, Canadian and international, new wave, punk, post-punk, garage rock, pop, electronica, ambient, and even